Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Guru Hari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Guru Hari Yashuranandana Braja Janarandana Yashuranandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanakari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunda Vihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashuranandana Braja Janarandana Yashuranandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jaya Om Vishnu Paya Paramahansa Parivraj Kacharya Stotarastra Shishi Maresi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Agarishthi Assemble Devotee Agarishthi Assemble Devotee Agarishthi Assemble Devotee Agarishthi Shri Shri Guru Gaurango So tonight I'm going to speak on a verse from the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. 10th chapter is called The Opulence of the Absolute. I'll just read through it since we don't have much time. This is text number 15. Swayamevatmanatmanam vetatvam purushottama bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. So this is Arjuna speaking to Lord Krishna. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of God, Lord of the universe. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord Krishna can be known by persons who are in a relationship with him through the discharge of devotional service, like Arjuna and his followers. Persons of demonic or atheistic mentality cannot know Krishna. Mental speculation that leads one away from the Supreme Lord is a serious sin. And one who does not know Krishna should not try to comment on Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the statement of Krishna. And since it is the science of Krishna, it should be understood from Krishna, as Arjuna understood it. It should not be received from atheistic persons. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, Vadanti tattvavidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shubhyate. The Supreme Truth is realized in three aspects, as impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and at last as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So at the last stage of understanding the Absolute Truth, one comes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A common man or even a liberated man who has realized impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma may not understand God's personality. Such men, therefore, may endeavor to understand the Supreme Person from the verses of Bhagavad Gita which are being spoken by this person, Krishna. Sometimes the impersonalists accept Krishna as Bhagavan or they accept his authority, yet many liberated persons cannot understand Krishna as Purushottama, the Supreme Person. Therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Purushottama. Yet one still may not understand that Krishna is the father of all living entities. Therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Bhuta Bhavana. And if one comes to know him as the father of all the living entities, still one may not know him as the Supreme Controller. Therefore, he is addressed here as Bhutesha, the Supreme Controller of everyone. And even if one knows Krishna as the Supreme Controller of all living entities, still one may not know that he is the origin of all the demigods. Therefore, he is addressed herein as Deva Deva, the worshipful God of all demigods. And even if one knows him as the worshipful God of all demigods, one may not know that he is the Supreme Proprietor of everything. Therefore, he is addressed as Jagatpati. Thus, the truth about Krishna is established in this verse by the realization of Arjuna, and we should follow in the footsteps of Arjuna to understand Krishna as he is. Arjuna is one of the eternal associates of Krishna. We learn from Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures that Krishna comes repeatedly to this world, and he has missions to fulfill. One of those missions is to enlighten people. The status quo of people in this world, the way people generally are, is in ignorance and darkness. We don't know who we are, where we came from, what the purpose of life is. And the information is available because Krishna comes and delivers it. But it gets lost, or people ignore it. So Krishna comes repeatedly to remind us what we're supposed to be doing, give us information about reality. So when Krishna comes, he doesn't come alone. He never goes anywhere alone. He always has his entourage, like Prabhupada said, like a king. Even in the Bhagavatam, when if you read in the Srimad Bhagavatam about different personalities and different pastimes that take place there, they're all... Those who are in leadership positions, they're always accompanied by an entourage glorifying them. For example, if you read the story of Dhruva Maharaj, so there's one point where Kuvera comes on the scene. Kuvera is called the treasurer of the demigods. So he's also called Yakshishwar. He's the master of yakshas, one kind of living entity. But when he comes on the scene, he just doesn't come by himself. He's surrounded by a whole group of people, and they're all offering prayers and glorifying him. So all these posted personalities around the universe, they have their entourage. They don't travel alone, and generally their entourage is offering them prayers and glorifying them wherever they go. So Krishna, of course, he has a big entourage. When he wants to accomplish something, he has everyone he needs to fill the roles for his performance. So here, when Krishna comes to speak Bhagavad Gita, among the other things that he wanted to accomplish when he came to earth this time 5,000 years ago. Then Arjuna was there to assist him in that delivering this message. So we see how nicely in this verse we see how nicely Arjuna is doing that. He's helping Krishna deliver the message that he wants to deliver by praising Krishna according to different names that bring out different aspects of him. There's so much to learn in Bhagavad Gita. It's a small book, really, 700 verses. But there's so much to learn because so many of the words are just packed with information. In fact, Arjuna addresses Krishna by 55 different names in the Bhagavad Gita. So, and many of those names can be taken in different ways. So we can learn so much about Krishna, even if we just take one of his names and analyze it, look into it. In fact, just to give the context of this verse that I read tonight, this is 10th chapter, verse number 15. So this is pretty much right in the middle of things, right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita. Some of our Vaishnav acharyas, teachers, have explained that the most important part, the heart of the Bhagavad Gita, is in the middle, in these middle chapters. So especially this 10th chapter is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. We have what are called the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So those have just been spoken. Krishna has just spoken those. Those are verses 8, 9, 10, and 11 of this chapter. So after Arjuna hears those, then he glorifies Krishna. He expresses his realization. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Basically, he says, "You're God. Now I understand. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Actually, Arjuna is in ecstasy when he's calling out like this, glorifying Krishna. "Oh, how wonderful I'm here with you. And now I understand fully." In the beginning of the Gita, of course, Arjuna was bewildered. He didn't know what to do. So as the chapters unfold in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna reveals more and more about himself. So Arjuna, he says this, "You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Abode, the Supreme Purifier." And then he says, "I totally accept as truth everything you say." So that's nice, because earlier he wasn't necessarily doing that. He had some doubts and he had some arguments. He was putting up different arguments to Krishna. So at this point, now he's saying, "I'm tired, I'm done with that, I'm not arguing anymore. I totally accept what you say." And then he says that nobody knows you, even the great sages. We find this theme often in the Vedic literature, that nobody really knows Krishna. Nobody knows God. We know something. What he reveals of himself, we can know something about him. But he's infinite. He's unlimited. How can we expect to know him in full? These days, people think there's really not much to know about him. Why waste our time? He's up there sitting far away, and really nobody knows anything about him, or not much about him, if he exists at all. But in the Vedic literature, so much is revealed about Krishna. And then still, it can go on and on and on. In fact, it's said that Lord Ananta, for those of you who don't know who Lord Ananta is, one form of Krishna is called Vishnu, an expansion, and he rests on a serpent bed. That serpent is called Ananta. He's a Naga snake, Naga. That means there are different kinds of snakes. My name is Nagaraj, so I need to know this thing. So, the Nagas are actually multi-headed, not this Naga Das. The other ones. So Anantas Chasmi Naga Anam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, among the Nagas I am Ananta. So this Ananta, sometimes it says he has thousands of heads, or mouths, and sometimes it says unlimited. So there's a verse in the second canto that says, and repeatedly this comes up, this idea, that with his unlimited mouths, since the beginning of time, when the time of course is beginningless, he's been praising Krishna, coming up with new things to say about Krishna, and he never runs out of things to say with his unlimited mouths. So There's so much to learn about Krishna. And in this one small book, Bhagavad Gita, there's so much. So here we have some different words that are very significant. Veta tvam purushottama. So purushottama. Purusha means a person. This word in itself is very significant. Because there are many, we see how Srila Prabhupada in the purport talks about the impersonalists and the atheists, actually. It's quite interesting when you read here, Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita should not be received from an atheistic person, from atheistic persons. So someone might think, well, of course not. It's about God. Who's going to listen to God from an impersonalist? Hear about God from an atheist. But the fact is, many people do. Srila Prabhupada was so strong about hearing from proper authority. Because there are people, we know that when Krishna came here, one thing that happened was somebody was always trying to kill him, especially when he was a little boy in Vrindavan. Kamsa was sending so many demons to kill him. So Prabhupada would often say that these atheistic commentators, they try to remove Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. In other words, they're trying to kill Krishna. There are so many asuras in Krishna's lila. So they came right out and directly confronted Krishna, trying to kill him. But there are so many with their intelligence today, these days, and of course this has been going on a long time, they want to take Krishna out of Bhagavad Gita. So remove him. So don't hear Bhagavad Gita from such persons. You have to hear from authorized persons. Then you can learn how something like this, what is the significance of it? Purusha Uttama. So Purusha means a person. Those of us who are devotees, that we're trying to be devotees, who are trained by Srila Prabhupada, a lot of times we just scratch our heads and we think, well, how could they get impersonal understanding from Bhagavad Gita? It's just so clear on every page that Krishna is revealing himself as a person. And there are so many words and direct statements by Krishna and by Arjuna to show the personhood of Krishna who's speaking Bhagavad Gita, and the qualities of God that he's describing, the characteristics of God, they apply to him, the person. So this word is here, Purusha Uttama. So Uttama means the highest, superlative person. Prabhupada would often say that just like in any group, there tends to be one lead person. Back in the old days when Prabhupada was talking about Johnson or Nixon or somebody like that, so he would say, there are so many persons in America, but there is one supreme person, Mr. Johnson. Where is he now? Right? So there, that person was relative. But we're all Americans, but there's one supreme American. You can see it that way. So similarly, there are so many persons, we're persons, and there's one supreme person. Now, this may just seem like not that such an astounding thing to say, but actually it is. It's revolutionary. I know when I first heard it, I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. God is a person like us. Not exactly like us, but he's a person at least. He thinks and feels. He does things. He has activities. And then if you think, well, he's the greatest person, that means everything that we can do, he can do better. Asamordva. There's no one equal to him and no one greater than him. So anything, of course, what can we do? We can't really do anything. We don't have many qualifications. We don't have much shakti, much power. But Krishna, the Supreme Person, his ability is that he can do anything that he wants to do. Swabhavaki jnana balakriyacha. Parashya shaktir vividayava shruyate. This is from the Shvetashvata Upanishad. This is one of the Upanishads that has a lot of nice slokas that are directly glorification of Krishna as God, at least as a supreme person. So this one says that God He has unlimited energy, or multifarious energies. So that means that when he wants to do something, there are no impediments to his accomplishing something. Swabhavaki, by his own desire, jnana balakriya, everything takes place automatically. And usually to accomplish something, you need knowledge, you need bala, you need strength, kriya, then you have to carry it out. But Krishna just wills it and it takes place automatically. So that's the kind of supreme person he is. He just wills something to happen and it takes place. So this is one of the aspects of Krishna that Arjuna is glorifying here. Now, of course, what was noteworthy in the purport is the way Prabhupada goes step by step. You may know this, or this person may know this about Krishna, but does he know this? May not understand this point. Before this, of course, one of the first points the Prabhupada makes about Krishna is that he's Bhagavan. He's Bhagavan. That means he possesses all opulences in full. Six opulences, especially. I always think about this. What is it about these six opulences? Now, I haven't seen it described exactly why these six, but my own understanding is that if you take any other kind of power or opulence, you can put it under one of these somewhere. It'll fit. Beauty, wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. I just came across, I probably forgot it, I may have read it before, but we know that Lord Chaitanya is called, or Krishna is called Triyuga. So Triyuga means that he appears in three yugas. Out of four yugas, there are generally four cycles of four ages, just like there are four seasons, cosmic time. So Triyuga means he appears in three yugas, because in the fourth yuga, which is the yuga that we're in, age that we're in, Kali Yuga, he comes in a hidden incarnation, Channa Avatar. Channa means hidden. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come out and say, I am Krishna, but his devotees revealed that. So another meaning of Triyuga, Yuga also means pair. Just like in the song to the Goswamis, Raghu Yugo, the two Raghus, Vande Rupa Sanatano Raghu Yugo. So Triyuga also means three pairs. So it also means that Krishna is Bhagavan because he has three pairs of opulences, six opulences. So he's Bhagavan because he has these in full. So this Krishna himself reveals in many places in Bhagavad Gita, some of his opulences come out, and we see how they can fit into these different categories. So Krishna, Arjuna addresses Krishna as Purushottam. So then the next phrase he addresses him by is Bhuta Bhavana. So Bhuta is one of those words that can be translated so many ways. I just did a quick search on the internet, which of course you can search for anything on there. There are Sanskrit dictionaries. So I looked up Bhuta there, and there were like 30 different synonyms or translations of the word Bhuta. The basic idea of Bhuta is being, or something that exists or was made to exist. Bhutva bhutva praliyate, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 8th chapter, that he produces, bhutva, things come out from him. So bhuta means things that he has created. And bhavana means the creator of those things, the person who makes the manifested things manifest, who makes them come out. So that's why we'll find even in Bhagavad Gita, the word bhuta refers to not only the living entities, which is as it's referred to here, any living being is called Bhuta. But we also find that the creation is also called Bhuta, because that also comes out from Krishna. And Krishna is the one who's making it come out. So this, of course, is another great revelation. Krishna has revealed, he himself has revealed earlier, in fact, earlier in this 10th chapter, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Matas sarvam parvartate. Everything comes out from me. Now, of course, in modern science, they have no concept of Well, basically the concept is that everything came out of nothing. No reason for it. Even time, sometimes devotees challenge, well, if there was a big bang, what happened before that? So they say, well, there's no time before that. The big bang created time at the same time. So these are, of course, who can think this way unless you're mad? So we know that Krishna existed before time. In fact, Krishna says, I am time. And from him, everything else comes out. In the seventh chapter, he says, he describes his two energies, his material energy, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on, and his spiritual energy, which is made up of the living entities, living beings, conscious beings in this world. Then he says that everything is made up of these two. That's it. That's the total. There's material and there's spiritual. And he says, I'm the source of both of those things. So Bhuta Bhavana really means that I am the source of everything. Whatever is manifest, whatever you see, whatever exists, I'm the source of all of that. Or Arjuna is saying, you are the source of all of that. I realize that. And then Arjuna addresses him as Bhutesha, so Bhuta Isha. Here we have the word Bhuta again. Here it's just translated as the Lord of everything. So going back to this idea of Bhuta as the jiva, or the living beings, there are so many different kinds. So many different kinds of living entities all over the universe. And they appear to come about in different ways. In fact, we can read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are a lot of strange ways that living beings make their appearance in this world. So people will, what is the tendency? You look at what's immediately there. You think that this, the example, of course, in our tradition is that you see a scorpion coming out of a pile of rice, and you think the rice produced the scorpion. But the rice didn't produce the scorpion. A mother scorpion laid eggs in the rice, and then the scorpion was born. So there's always some cause before. But Krishna is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karana. Now all of these Bhutas also, devarshi bhutaptrinam patrinam, there's a verse in the 11th canto. It says when we come to this world, we owe so much to so many other beings because we come here with nothing and so many things are already set up for us. There's a whole society and of course there's the light of the sun that's given to us somehow. We didn't do anything to get it. And the sages have provided us knowledge. It's come down over time. So according to traditional Vedic values, when you enter this world, right away you have so many obligations. And as soon as you start coming of age, you have to start paying those back in certain ways by doing different things, different kinds of sacrifices and so on. Your ancestors, for example, you owe them to, otherwise you wouldn't live if it wasn't for your ancestors. So you pay them back by continuing the line. So it's kind of a materialistic consideration, but this is the idea. So in this verse, it says Bhuta. So Bhuta can just mean, it just means the living entities in general. So practically, we owe everybody something because we're all connected. Just imagine, just like today, in order to get anything, we go to the store and we buy something to eat. But how many people are involved in us getting that thing that we're eating? I was driving behind a truck on the interstate the other day and it said something like, without truckers, America stops. And that was on the back of the semi-truck. So, of course, they're proud that their person's occupation, he's a trucker. But it's actually true. If the fuel runs out, and that means the trucker is also dependent on somebody to get the fuel out of the earth. And how did it get into the earth? We're dependent on that. So many things all along the way. I remember years ago there was a book, it was about a pencil. What's involved in getting a pencil? So many hundreds of people are involved for you to get that one pencil. You have all the different parts and they all have to be processed and packaged and shipped and soul and everything. Somebody has to plant the tree. So many things are involved. So Buddha means all the living entities. Practically, it's unlimited. How can you repay all the people that you owe all these things to, all the debts that we owe to so many different kinds of Buddhas? So the simple answer is, you serve Bhutesh. You serve Krishna, Bhuta Bhavana. You go to the root. This is a good illustration of what it means to go to the root. If you want to feed all the leaves on the tree, you water the root of the tree. So if you want to satisfy all the Buddhas, at least satisfy them in the sense that you have an obligation to repay them somehow. So if you please Krishna, then Krishna wipes away your debts. And when you do that, also Krishna, if there's some little mistake, because traditionally you have to do things just right. If you don't pay your debts just right, just like our credit card bills, right? If you don't do it just right, you slip up somehow and you forget, oh, I missed my deadline, now they're going to whack me with a big, all kinds of interest. And so our debts are like that too. If we don't do it just right, then you're going to have to pay for it, at least if you're under the laws of karma. But if you serve Krishna, then Krishna takes care of all of it. Sapala mulam bhajata priyasya. He says that my devotee, even if my devotee does something not so good, if he surrendered to me, then I'll take care of all his debts. I'll make sure his obligations are all taken care of. So this is Bhutesh. Because Krishna is the Lord of all the Bhutas, then he can tell them all, just relax, I'm going to take care of it, you don't have to worry. So then Arjuna addresses him as Deva Deva. So Deva is another word that can be translated in so many ways. But generally it's taken, Deva means God or godly. Or it means, we say the Devatas, the demigods. Or the gods, people say there are so many gods in Hinduism, there are so many gods. It's so confusing, all these gods. This is one reason why you have to hear from the right source, so you don't get confused. Because there's a bewildering array of personalities in the Vedic hierarchy. Of course, people don't know that there's a hierarchy. They think it's just, they're all the same, and there's no one at the top. But Deva Deva means, no, there's someone at the top. That's Krishna. He's at the top. One thing you find in the Bhagavatam, whenever great personalities get together, that when Lord Vishnu arrives on the scene, then everybody stops, offers their dandavat. Even if Lord Brahma is there, Lord Shiva is there, there are many pastimes like that. The demigods, the lower demigods, you can say, they're always getting in trouble in one way or another. So a lot of times Lord Brahma has to show up and try to help things out, or Lord Shiva, just like the Daksha sacrifice, for those who have read that pastime in the fourth canto. So they pacify Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma is there, then Vishnu arrives, or there's another path, the Prachetas, King Prithu. By the way, I just noticed this recently. I think this must be the longest set of chapters in the Bhagavatam, is the story of Prithu Maharaj. It's 9 chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So besides Krishna, of course, Krishna has 90 chapters, but Prithu Maharaj, be a partial incarnation, so he gets 9. So in that pastime also, Lord Vishnu arrives on the scene, and Indra is there, and Brahma is there. Brahma has arrived first, because the sages in that sacrifice, they were actually going to, by their mantras, they were going to cast Indra into a sacrificial fire and kill him, because he'd stolen Prithu Maharaj's sacrificial horse, his 100th horse he was going to sacrifice. So Brahma came and said, no, don't kill Indra. He praised him highly, actually. He said, he's the sum of all the demigods. So this scene is there. Brahma's there. And so many great... Of course, as I said before, there's always an entourage. So many great personalities are there. Sages are there. So then when Lord Vishnu comes, then everybody offers dandavats. Everybody. Everything stops when Lord Vishnu arrives on the scene. So this is clearly demonstrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's he's Vishnu. He's also revealing that, the majestic form. He reveals himself in so many ways. So he's finally here, besides being Deva Deva, the God of Gods. In fact, even this Deva Deva means all the other incarnations of Krishna also, he's at the top, as we learn from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is another thing that bewilders people. Because they see, so if you read any of the some of the avatars of Krishna, so powerful. Look at Lord Varaha, he lifted up the whole earth. So how powerful is that? And then you're saying that Krishna is greater? Yes, that's what we're saying. That's what Arjuna is saying. The friend of Krishna, devotee of Krishna. And Arjuna is saying, I'm not just saying it, Narada is saying it, so many other great sages are saying it. So he's Deva, Deva in that sense too. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then finally here, Jagatpati, the Lord of the Universe. This sounds almost anticlimactic after all of the other things that he's been described. But this universe is so vast. And there are so many powerful personalities making things happen. There are so many, there are people behind all of the things that we read about. And they're so inconceivable. These persons, if you read in the Vedic literature, I was mentioning the other day in Bhagavatam class that I read in the fifth canto, that Varunadeva, you may know Varuna, he's in charge of the waters. So there's even a pastime in the 10th canto where the servants of Varuna, they kidnap Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, and they take him down to Varunadeva's kingdom inside the water. So Krishna has to go and rescue him. So in the 5th canto, it said that Varunadeva is apamaya. That means that he's made of water. He doesn't just live in the water. He's apamaya, means he's made of water. So try to figure out how that works. Huh? What does he do exactly? How does he do all the things that we do if he's made out of water? So we see in the Bhagavatam there are so many things we read that are just inconceivable. How does that work? Which is good. We know that when you read the Bhagavatam, you're supposed to be progressing step by step so that when you get to Krishna, then you have some appreciation. And of course, part of that appreciation is to be humble, not to think that I know everything. Because when you read something like Varunadeva is made out of water, then you realize, well, I really don't know very much because I can't figure out what that's supposed to mean. So there are so many things like that. You say, if I don't understand these lesser things, then obviously I don't understand what's going on when Krishna's playing with his friends. Or when Mother Yashoda is chasing him around. I think I know what's going on there. But do I really know what's going on there? Of course, Srila Prabhupada is guiding us. So there's a certain sense. We're protected by Srila Prabhupada's instruction so we don't make an offense. But if we can't figure out how watery entities can do things, what about Satchidananda Vigraha entities? How exactly are they doing things? Existence itself is really what the spiritual body is made of, being. Sometimes in theology, they use this idea, they state that God is being itself. So in a sense, that's true, because Krishna is Sat-Chit-Ananda Vigraha, so Krishna is non-different from his form, so part of his form is Sat. What is Sat? Sat is being, or existence. So how does existence perform pastimes? How does Sat-Chit-Ananda Vigraha do things? So that's why it's called the Chintya. Chintya kalu ye bhava natang starkina yojayet. Our tiny brains can't penetrate into that. So this Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada would say, this is the ABCD. So just see how much is in this ABCD. Of course, ABCD, if you go all the way up to Z, you get a lot more. But Krishna is called Adhokshaja. That means he's beyond ABCD. Literally, that's what it means in Sanskrit. Adha Akshaja. Akshaja is like A to Z in Sanskrit. From A to Ksha, So adhakshaja means beyond A to Z. Everything you can describe with your words is not enough, or the way we conceptualize, of course, in language. So whatever is going on in our minds in language is not going to grasp Krishna. So the only way to understand Krishna to some degree, Arjuna begins this prayer here by saying, only you actually understand yourself. Swayam evatmanatmanam. Nobody else. But to understand Krishna to some degree, we have to come to his level. Level of spirit, in other words. We have to come to the spiritual level. We can never come to his level completely. But we have to get rid of the coverings and come into the same category. Enter onto that plane of existence, that plane of consciousness by which we can these ideas about Krishna can actually penetrate, realize, they can become vijnana. That's our whole process, of course. We are, when we're hearing is the foundation of what we do. It's so important. Prabhupada emphasized over and over and over again, you have to repeatedly hear. Because when we hear, especially two things happen. You can say that intellectually we begin to understand. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who reads Bhagavad Gita worships me with his intelligence. So things start to make sense. They're reasonable. Hetu madbhiva nishchitaya, Krishna says. This is reasonable. He said basically it's been explained very reasonably in Vedanta Sutra. So it's reasonable. So on that level when we hear, we see how reasonable it is. But at the same time, because the words are Krishna himself, Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. The words are non-different. The sound of Krishna's vibration is as powerful as Krishna. So that's purifying. Well, that's sarira vijaja. So that's powerful sound too, isn't it? Everyone's tasting the prasadam through the ears by hearing the song. So the power. So this happens by hearing. So that's our process. By hearing, we understand intellectually. That helps us become firm, get firm conviction, and at the same time our heart becomes purified. That's an amazing thing. If you hear some mundane subject, it doesn't purify your heart so you can understand it better over time. Just intellectually you have to hear it. But Krishna's words, because they're coming from another realm and they deal with another realm, they purify the heart so we understand. The more we hear them, the more we're able to understand them. So here, we're hearing, of course, Arjuna is one of our great saints, sadhu shastra guru we hear from. And by his mercy, we're able to get so much information about Krishna in this wonderful conversation. So I went a little over time. I'll stop here. Of course, anybody wants to go to take prasadam, go ahead. If there's anyone. But if anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can also do that. Anyone wants to stay? Yes. Do we have a microphone here?
Yes.
Jai Gauri, Mataji.
You mentioned about Lord Chaitanya when you were describing the first names that Arjuna.
Yuga.
Can you tell that story of how Krishna desired to come as Lord Chaitanya?
I don't know if I know the story. I know it's related in the Chaitanya Mangal, and there are other stories too in different Puranas, but I don't know the details of that story. There's something about Narada Muni going there, and yeah, sorry, my memory doesn't. It's not one of the books that I've read many times, so I don't remember exactly how that works. Of course, we know there are many reasons, just like in the prayers of Kunti Devi. She says, some people say you came for this reason, some people say you came for that reason. And many of the reasons are valid. They're all true. Of course, ultimately, Krishna has his own reason. He comes to have fun, is what he does. Everything he does is fun. It's lila. It's pastime. He comes to enjoy. So whether he does it there or here or in this form or that form, ultimately, that's what it's about. And how does he enjoy? He enjoys with his devotees. So for some reason, which I can't remember exactly what it was, I think Lord Chaitanya showed his form to Narada, if I remember correctly. And the devotees, Radharani may have been there, I don't remember exactly. So then I think Narada said, oh, you have to... That's another thing, what Krishna does. He does in response to the requests of his devotees. When the devotees ask him to do something, he can't say no. He sells himself to his devotees. So if Narada Muni says, please come here, of course Narada's not going to demand Krishna to do anything, but he can request, oh, this form is so wonderful, please show it to everyone. So that can inspire, we can say, Krishna to reciprocate with his devotee. Narada is so wonderful. If you read the Bhagavatam, you'll see that he's everywhere. Practically in every pastime, he shows up. It's really amazing, actually. You can almost, the Bhagavatam, you can almost tell the story just by following Narada around as he works his way through the Bhagavatam. Right from the beginning, he's there. Sometimes he makes little cameo appearances. When the demigods went to see Lord Shiva to get his pardon from the Daksha sacrifice, they hadn't heard anything about Narada. I was thinking, where's Narada? And then, who's Lord Shiva speaking to? Narada Muni. So there he is. So he's such an intimate devotee of Krishna. So Krishna reciprocates with devotees like that who are just, they know nothing but Krishna and Krishna knows nothing but them. So this is part of his enjoyment. That's how he enjoys, by satisfying the desires of his devotees. So this pastime of Lord Chaitanya, that's certainly involved. In many ways, of course, the devotees in Navadvip, they're also asking him to come. So that's a reason why he came, among many others. All right, I think we should stop here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.